So, okay, page 77, chapter 13. This is about compounds. And compounds is, again, a very important part of Pali. And there's all different types of compounds. And basically, a compound is just like a compound is a combination of a number of words put together. And the whole compound is essentially like a single word in a sentence. It works like a single word in a sentence. So the inflection is at the very end, and the words that are previous to the last word, you know, there's no inflection. They just sort of, you know, are just put together, and they use a stem form normally when you put them together. And there's all different types of compounds, and we'll see about these compounds as we go through the book. And the point is that the connection between the words in a compound vary depending on the kind of compound you have. And one very common type of compound is the one we see below here. It's called a taparisa compound. And in a taparisa compound, there is like a case connection between the two words. For example, you have here madhouse. You see in the middle of the page there, it gives you madhouse. Now that madhouse could be like, if you like, a taparisa compound, because there might be a case relation between mad and house. Mad and house means house for the mad, usually, right? The madhouse, house for the mad. And for could be like a dative, in other words, for the purpose of the mad, or for the benefit of the mad, you have a house. So that is how it works. You can see there is a case relation, that the dative goes between those two. So if you divide a madhouse up into two parts, mad will have a dative ending, and house would have whatever ending that the whole compound has in the sentence. And that is, I won't actually go into these other compounds because it mentions them here, but we'll see those later on anyway. But that is the main type of compound we have here. And one of the points that Ekewarden makes here is an important point, that usually when you find a compound, usually you don't have to analyze it, you don't have to break it apart and find out what kind of case relationship there is between the words and all those kind of things. Usually all you have to do is you have to just read it in a sentence as it is, just like in English, madhouse. You know, sort of what it means. You don't actually have to analyze whether it means house for the mad or whatever. Madhouse is obvious. And the same thing in Pali, usually a compound is obvious. It's like in German you have lots of compounds. I think in Finnish you have compounds, right? There's the same thing here.
Yeah.
Like long words.
Yeah.
In Norwegian you have a lot of compounds anyway. You make these long kind of words. So similar kind of ideas, yeah. Yeah, so then we come to the first type of compound, which is called the taparisa compound. And of course, there is no English names for these things, so we just call it taparisa compound. What did he say here?
Sorry, Bhante, you said here about not needing to analyze the compound with the substituents to get the sense of the word.
Yeah.
Meaning we should just understand the meaning of the compound.
No, it really depends on the situation. Often, you don't have to analyze it.
Right.
But sometimes you do have that.
You mean its meaning should be quite clear, or
usually it's quite clear, quite obvious straight away when you read it.
But like I was just saying, blackbird, for instance, here.
Yeah.
I mean, one is a bird, or two it's a type of a plane, or something like that. Like the blackbird plane.
Yeah, but that's the meaning of the overall compound. That's a bit different, because what I'm talking about here is how the two words relate to each other in the compound.
But I just noticed that, like in English, we don't use a lot of compounds. We don't have a lot.
In very, very rare language.
Whereas, like in other languages, like we'll just say in German, compounding is very common. Mm-hmm. So I noticed that German speakers are very good at figuring out the meaning of a compounded word.
Yes.
Like often when I was reading in German, like it wasn't really immediately clear to me
what
these compounds meant.
Sure. But what I'm saying is that usually if you just look at the compound, just read it as it stands on the page, you take the individual pieces and you just read them together, usually it will be very obvious what it's meant.
Yeah.
If it is not obvious, then you have to start analyzing it.
Mm.
And sometimes the case is also, sometimes you can actually have the particular word can have many different meanings. You know, there's many different ways of analyzing the same word.
Mm.
Then you have to try to figure out, that's why it becomes complicated.
Mm. But you just say, don't overanalyze
it. If you can avoid it, don't do it. But sometimes, if it is an important like doctrinal statement, you know, of the Buddha, you have to be very careful how you analyze it. And if you are not really careful, you might end up with the wrong meaning.
Okay.
And that's when it gets problematic. And that's why you have arguments with the people. You know, you have discussions. But what does it actually mean?
Yeah.
And what happens? Yeah. And so what it's saying here on page 78 is that the prior member is associated with the posterior by a direct relation. So this relation is a relation of case, like I was saying before. And here he has the idea here of madhouse, just like I was mentioning before, for the mad. In other words, probably a dainty but purpose, exactly. Yeah. So, and what he says here, which is, if that compound was divided up, then the word mad, which is the first word, that would then get that particular case added onto it on the end. Then you have grasshopper. The case relation could be in the grass. A hopper in the grass, for example, might be the meaning of that one. Somebody hops in the grass. That is a locative relation. We come to in chapter 16. And any kind of case might be the relation in a caparisa compound. It can even be an accusative case sometimes. The genitive relation may be very general, very, very vague. Anyway, so here you have some examples down here. Brahmana parisa. So, I mean, this is very obvious, really. If you read that word, Brahmana means Brahmin, parisa means assembly. So, Brahmin assembly. It obviously means an assembly of Brahmins, right? So the case relation is genitive, a Brahmin assembly. It's pretty obvious what that must mean. Rajaputo, another one, literally king son. Rajaputo, king son. In other words, the son of a king. Prince. That's another compound there. Okay, then it says here participles can also be the last member of compounds. What else does it say here? And it says here the compounds are very freely formed in Pali, much more so than in English, which is true, except that in other languages they are formed very freely, like in German and Norwegian or Swedish or Finnish or whatever. And also they're not restricted to two members, so you can have compounds that are really long, three or four or more members as well. Kuta Gara Sala is an example of that. Kuta means peak, Gara is house, Sala is a hall. So the hall of the house with a peak, or something like that, a gable that they have here. So that is just a quick introduction to Taparisa compounds. Usually you just read them out and you understand what they are from that. Then we come to the causative conjugation. This is a form of the verb in Pali, and this is a particular conjugation. And it, basically, this causative verb just means the cause of a particular action. So let's see what he says here. Meaning the cause, meaning to cause someone or something else to do the action of the ruler. That's what it means, of course. You cause somebody or something to do a particular action, which that verb signifies usually. And this is called causative. And the way that you actually recognize the causative, you see on page 79 here, is that you have this, there's the E ending. The E which comes inside, is in the middle of the compound, towards the end of the compound. That is how you recognize the causative. But sometimes that E is also given in a fuller or more complete form, aya. So all of these things that you see up here are different ways of seeing the causative. You have, actually I should say first of all that the usual way of signifying the causative is this P that you have in line 4. This is kind of the distinct marker for the causative, P or long A plus P. That's how you recognize it. And that's added to the root, so it comes towards the end of the word, right? Before the actual inflection. And also, it has the E as well. That's another indication of the causative. And all of these forms in bracket there, the pe, ape, paya, apaya, all of these are different ways of signifying the causative in Pali. That's how you actually recognize the causative. And sometimes you don't know whether something is a causative or whether it is a verb of the seventh conjugation, because seventh conjugation verbs also have this E in the added to the root. So it looks like a causative. Sometimes you have to actually know from looking up in a dictionary whether it is an ordinary present tense or whether it is a causative. Okay, yeah. Then he says that the meaning of a causative can be a straightforward causative, in other words, by that he means that you cause somebody or something to do a particular action. So if I say, what's a good example of a causative? Well, it could be anything. You know, I cause Nicholas to read, you know, you sort of give him a book or whatever, cause him to read. That would be the causative. You make him read. Or it can be used with any verb, basically, like that. If you cause someone to do whatever, you make them do it.
No, it's a verb.
Yeah, it's a verb, exactly. So, or that's a straightforward causative function, or it can be more specialized, idiomatic meaning. So, for example, the root vach, which is to speak, vacheti, which is the causative, which literally means to cause to speak. So I cause, he makes speak, actually means to recite, he recites. So if I cause Peter to speak, it means he actually recites something, yeah. That's what it means. So in other words, yeah. And then you have the causative of the vad, vadeti, which also means to say, actually means to play an instrumental music. And the reason for that is because you are causing like the instrument to speak, right? You're causing the instrument to speak, which means that he's playing an instrument.
Mr. Kong.
Exactly. Okay, it comes to mind, doesn't it? Sometimes it's not easy to decide whether to class a verb as an independent seventh conjugation root or as a causative, as what we said before. There's a certain amount of disagreement among grammarians of the proper classification, e.g. of vadeti. Okay, it doesn't really matter as long as we understand what is being translated. Mm. With the up, what is it called?
But you have to look very carefully at the context, like vadeti. I mean, it really looks like a present tense. You have to see it parked next to an instrument or something.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it is present tense regardless. You mean ordinary present tense. Yeah.
Yeah. But like, you know, like vadeti normally means say or something like that. Okay, Mr. Conch, say something.
Yeah.
Rather than Mr. Conch, play.
Yeah, but I think, I'm not sure if that was exactly what it was, wasn't it? Not in that one there. What was it again here? Oh, we haven't seen that yet, so I don't know. They're coming up later on. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Speak, Mr. Conch. Yeah. Yeah, don't know. Okay, so we have the causative with up of the root chin, cheta payati. And so chin is to cut, right? So here we have a causative to call, he causes to cut. In other words, this could mean, for example, he makes somebody else cut. Or maybe it can have some other meanings as well, I'm not sure. From ta, you have tapayati. In which the root vowel is usually shortened, and which often has the meaning he leaves aside, he accepts the path, he causes to stand, he causes to remain, quite literally. So it means to accept, you leave it aside. Mm. Instead of the more literal meaning to stand or to erect something. Besides the possibility of a double formation with R alongside a causative form in E, which may have double meaning as well as double form, triple form is sometimes made by adding P twice. Thus, from ru to grow, we have a causative form with the elision of the H, ropeti, he plants. In other words, you cause to grow, if you plant something. That's how often these verbs work. You have to understand the meaning that, you know, you cause something to grow actually means you plant something. And another causative, which is a double causative, is ropapeti, meaning he causes to cause to grow, or he has something planted. This doesn't mean he has planted it in the sense of being a past tense, but he makes somebody else plant it. That's what it means in this case. He has it planted. If you understand the difference there, it causes somebody to do the planting. As with ordinary verbs, the agent of a causative verb is in the nominative case. The person or the instrument through whom the action is performed goes usually in the accusative. The instrumental may be used instead on account of the sense of instrument. The person through whom the action is. Yeah, I don't think I have to worry too much about this. I think it comes out very easily when you start reading the Pali here. But the causative verb may take one patient more than the equivalent ordinary verb. The causative of the intransitive verb may take one patient. The verb may be said to become transitive. The causative of a transitive verb may take two patients. The causative of a verb which ordinarily takes two accusatives may take three accusatives. For example, to be is intransitive and takes no patient. To cause to be, in other words, to develop, it takes one because you develop the mind. So once you put the causative in there, you always have a patient, possibility of a patient. You develop the mind, so straight away, because you cause something to be, it actually allows you to take a patient. So in each of these cases, you actually have one more patient than you normally have. So it becomes very clear when you start translating this, it's not really a big problem. To enter may take one patient, enter a house. To cause to enter takes two. You cause a man to enter a house, right? So again, you can see how it causes it, because you're always causing somebody or something. So because that person that you're causing becomes another patient with the causatives. To take, to lead, etc. may have two patients. To take to a village, a goat. But to cause to take may take three patients. You cause a man to take a village, take a goat to the village. Right? So three things. Yeah. So it's pretty obvious what's going on here. It's nothing you need to worry too much about. The causative in conjugation includes the various tenses and participles formed from causative stems as from the seventh conjugation. So basically, you just have causative is just a verb, basically, just like any other verb, and it takes all the kind of conjugations, the past, the future, all the tenses that ordinary verbs do have. So his English function, just like an ordinary verb, there's no difference except that it's causative. So you have a long list here of causative verbs down the bottom. Kapapeti. So kapapeti is to arrange, to put in order. And kapapeti means to cause, to get ready, to have somebody put in order, to organize, basically. You have kareti. This is from karoti. Karoti is to make or to work. And kareti is to cause to work. In other words, for that reason, it also has like the idiomatic meaning of to govern or to rule, because you are causing other people to sort of function, basically. So you're causing them to work. It's like a king causes somebody to work. Karapeti, this is a double causative, and he causes to make, he has something built. I'm not sure if it is a double causative or if it's an alternative form of a causative. I don't actually know. Chelapeti, he causes to cut, we saw that before. Janeti, he causes to be born. He produces, in other words, he makes something arise, in other words. Japeti, he causes to burn, he sets fire to. Tapeti, he causes to stand, he erects. He makes stand up, he causes to remain, he accepts. Nipateti, cause to fall down, he drops, he puts down. Often they can be just reduced to ordinary meaning. You can get rid of the causes to something, because sometimes if you have the causes always, it sounds a bit artificial in English. Payeti, he causes to drink. Babeti.
With the payeti, how would you translate it instead of cause to drink? Make somebody drink something?
Yeah, you probably say he makes him drink or something. Yeah, I make him drink. Yeah. Make him drink poison. That's a classical one. Yeah. And you have babeti, which means to cause to be, in other words, to develop. This is a standard meaning of this verb, is to develop. Amatapeti, to cause to be addressed. He has the meaning, he has to invite. He has invited. I guess the point here is that he is saying that somebody should be addressed. So he's actually sending somebody out and telling him to come or something. That's why he calls it invited here. Munchapeti, he causes to be free. In other words, he sets free. Patiyadapeti, he causes to be prepared. Yapeti, he causes to go. Many of these verbs are a bit obscure. Yojapeti, he causes to be yoked, carriage. Aruchapeti, causes to be announced. Ropeti, we saw before, causes to grow, to plant, etc. Aropeti, causes to mount. In other words, it puts on top of. It also means it shows, to disprove all of these things I meant. Pavateti, it causes to go, he sets going. Nibbapeti, it causes to be extinct. This is later directed to Nibbana, Nirva. Because he extinguishes a fire. Causes to be extinguished, I think is better. Pavedeti, he makes known. He causes to be known. In other words, he makes known. Makes sense in English. Pavedeti, he causes to enter, he brings in. Pavajeti, he causes to go forth. In other words, he banishes. Yeah. It might also mean he ordains, another possibility here. Yeah. The verb is the same, papajeti, to go forth, can either mean to banish or to ordain. Nisidapeti, he causes to sit down. Saveti, he causes to hear. So this could mean like, you say something here. That could mean like causing to hear here. So, or to announce, maybe. Parisodeti, he causes to become pure. So, and then you have, just you can see here, how all of these basically have all the other tenses just like everything else. So these are just some examples that he gives down here. So for example, from kappapeti, which means like to put in order or to organize, you have kappapehi, which is imperative. So it's the second person singular, right? So it means organize, put in order. And you have the aorist, karapesi, it means he organized.
Is that where kapia comes from?
Kapia, no, yeah, no, that's a different thing. Is it? Kapia.
To have a kapia.
Translators just make this allowable.
Yeah, but a kapia is also a person who makes things allowable, right? It's a kapia. It could be. I can't remember.
Usually, like the Burmese would say that a lay person attendant to a monk is a kapia.
Is a kapia, yeah. I'm not sure now. Yeah. We have tapeso, which is the aorist of tapeti, which means to accept, to put aside. So it means that they accepted. This is the past, the aorist. And all of these are the same, basically. I don't think it's necessary to go through them. It's just to show that these verbs are just like any other verbs, that they take the same past, the aorist tenses, the same future, the same imperative, etc. And you have them also in participles. So you have, for example, here you have the present participle, karento, karayato. Karayato is the genitive form. The genitive form of the present participle is always a to ending. That's an important one to remember, actually, because it's very different from the other genitive endings. So keep that in mind. You have ceda pento and ceda payato. Again, the payato is a genitive ending again. So keep that in mind. Da pento, pacento, these are all the present participles. The ento, you see the NT there, which is the classical way of recognizing the present participle. Your japento, etc. And the past participle, again, you see here the ta ending, or the eta ending, all the way through here. Kapita, karita. So this means, kapita, karita means, or karita means like done, right? Or caused to be done. And kapita is
caused to be arranged.
Yeah, caused to be arranged, exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm. Caused, yeah. He causes to be arranged.
Is he passed?
He caused to be arranged, yeah. Yeah, he caused to be arranged. The cause verb has to go in the past, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Causing to make. Jaren karapetra is having caused to be to be arranged or prepared, yeah. Amata Petra, having caused to be invited, etc. So they're all the same, so they don't really need to go through all that. And it has here, despite the mechanical appearance of the causative in theory, as a kind of tense of the ordinary verb, in practice the meaning and usage of causative verbs is highly idiomatic, and each one requires careful attention. So in other words, they are basically, what he's saying here, that basically they are like regarded as an individual verb form, and not just as a causative of ordinary verbs, is what he's saying. So you have to, each one has to remember, basically.
Like Bhavetti calls it to be developed, that's really related to after meditation.
Yeah, exactly, precisely. Mm. Precisely, yeah. Okay, so let's just go through the vocabulary as well now. Akuteti, to strike. Gavesati, to look for, to search. That's quite interesting, quite important verb. You have the, to search, for example, the spiritual life, the search of the spiritual life is the Gavesati. Gavesako, exactly, yeah, the one who searches, yeah.
Very common name as well, Damagavesi.
Amata Gavesi, yeah. Pekati is to look, to watch. Vajati, to resort to. In other words, look like you have a friend, you resort to a particular friend. Kamaro, the smith. Kando, you know what Kando is? It's the Kando, the five Kandas. Group, collection, mass. Pachatiko, enemy. Pabato, mountain or hill. Pasado, palace is a terrible translation for pasado, but it doesn't really mean palace. It means more like a mansion or maybe a house even.
But Pabato. That's not as common as Giri.
Giri, no, Pabato is very common in the suttas. I think Pabato is probably more common than Giri, actually. Punjo.
Is it just that Giri is more poetic than that? It comes up quick as a name?
I don't really know, I guess. I'm not sure why, Pabato, yeah. Punjo, heap. So a heap of straw is called, what's it called again in Pali? It's a straw. Kus. Not sure. Heat, yeah. Anyway, Balo, fool. So opposite of Pandita, you have Pandita, Balo. Bala is a fool, Pandita is a wise man. Bedo, to divide, so you have Sangha Beda, it's division of the Sangha, that's a schism. Manto, prayer hymn, this is what the Brahmins do, they do manta, it means prayers and hymns. Migo, deer, beast, animal. Samudaya, origination, arising. This is something coming into existence. And the word udaya, without the sun, is the same word. Sun is just a prefix there. And it occurs both with and without prefix. Siho, lion. Like my old mate, Dhammasiya, the lion of the Dhamma. He's over in Brisbane now.
Do they have lions in India?
Yeah.
More like tigers, right?
I think they have both.
Well, no, the national symbol for India is four lions in the four directions.
Yeah.
They still exist in they still exist in the deserts of Raja, in Rajasthan.
They must have had both. They must have had both tigers and lions.
They're still there. The Bengali tigers and the.
Yeah.
But the lion is extremely rare. They're trying to bring it back.
I always thought lions are all in Africa.
No, they're not.
But in China, they didn't have lions. So that's why you find that some of these Chinese and also the Indonesian sculpture of lions, because they read about lions, they're really weird because they have no idea what it looked like. They look like really, really funny. It's kind of like the lions that we have down at the retreat center.
Yeah.
If you look at lower, they look pretty, pretty strange. They're pretty kind of unusual lions because they didn't really know what they looked like.
Okay.
They just, make it up. It's some kind of beast. Aranyan, forest. Literally, Aranya means not of the king, because Ranya is from king, of the king. Aranya, not of the king. So, in other words, basically wilderness is what it really means, probably. Wilderness. Indriya, you know that means? Indriya, faculty or power or strength.
It doesn't have
to do with
India. Sorry.
Nothing to do with India. It has to do with Indra. Inda is the name for the king of the heaven of the 33. He's called in the suttas. I must have been a bit tired myself now. He is called the what's he called again in the suttas? Anyway, that's what his name is, and that obviously has the meaning of power or somebody powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Indra.
Isn't there an Indra?
Indra is a Sanskrit form of Indra.
Oh.
Indra. Yeah. Indra. Yeah. Kadaniya Buddha. This is the kind of stuff you go when you go to Dana. There's two types of food. There's Bhojaniya and Kadaniya. One of them is usually more like staple food. The other one is all the other stuff. Kadaniya is all the other stuff. Palala, there you go. Palala is straw, exactly. So Palala Punjo is a heap of straw, precisely. That's the compound there. Palala Punjo. Batang, meal, mulang, root, base, capital. You know, like base for purchasing something. Capital. Samma is a vocative word, means deer. Sorry? Long A at the end. An Uttara, unsurpassed. Uttara is like, without something which is not surpassed, supreme. An Uttara. An plus Uttara. Uttara means beyond, so there's not beyond, nothing beyond. Abhokasa means the open air. Arya, you know what that means? Arya, noble, excellent, exalted. Uttana means like supine, on one's back, lying down, stretched out. Gambira, profound. The Dhamma is often said to be Gambira, means profound in the ordinary sense. Nava, new. The opposite of Purana, which is like old. Nitita is a past participle, which means completed, ready. So the meal is ready. Attan, nititan. Or also means completed in other ways as well. Panita means excellent, delightful. So you have panita bhojanais, are excellent foods, delightful foods. And you also have panita as also an adjective for, you know, as samadhi attainment as well is used, panita. Purattima, the east. And then you have some other words at the very end here. You have Vibhitta, which is related to Vibhicha, which Vibhicheva Kamehi is the same word. Vibhitta means apart from, separated from, isolated from. Ayoniso, Yoniso means like, basically, I think wisely is the best way of translating Yoniso, I think. Yeah. And Ayoniso, that means literally unwisely. Yeah. So stupidly or unwisely. That's the standard meaning of that word. Some of the meanings he has here, I don't really understand. Inconsequentially, I don't know what he means by that, for example. Uddan, up or above, like upstream. Uddasota, up and above. Kachi, perhaps, did. I doubt whether, I hope. Aren't you? Okay. Katang, how, why? Tikatung, thrice. Literally, tikatung means literally. T is three, katung is times, so three times. Thrice. Dani, now. Pasena, on its side. Pasta is on the side. This is the instrumental of pasta, on its side, used adverbially, says here. Yava, as far as, up to as much. To what extent?
Where would you use pasena? Sleep on its side?
Yeah, for example, yeah.
Oh, like Buddha is resting on the side.
Yeah. How does that work? The lion's posture.
Yeah.
I can't remember now. It might be used there. Could be used there. Possibly. Yeah.
It kind of means on the side of his body.
He's resting on the side. Yeah. The side of the body. Yeah.
On his side. It's genitive, isn't it?
Instrumental.
Instrumental.
Yeah. But what he's saying there is that sometimes these different cases, they're not used in the instrumental sense, but they are used adverbially. Yeah? So they have a special meaning with that particular ending. Yeah? So pasena can mean on its side, even though it looks like it is an instrumental thing. Yeah? It has an adverbial sense. gets special meaning in that case. Like Ioniso is actually an ablative case, which usually means from. So from the womb, my little Ioniso. But it's probably used adverbially. It just means wisely or something like that. That's what you have to keep in mind there. Yeah. So, anything else? Are you happy?